This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Think back to the last time you were at your doctor's office, maybe getting a prescription. Did you notice the pen the doctor was using? Did it have the name of a pharmaceutical company or a drug you've never heard of on it? You know what I mean? Medical swag. The pens were just small potatoes, but doctors used to receive much bigger gifts from pharmaceutical companies and medical device makers. Sports and theater tickets, vacation trips. That is, until 2008, when Massachusetts passed landmark bans on medical gifts. Well, there's a push now in the legislature to strike down that law. We'll take a look at that a little later in the show today. But first, Senator Scott Brown announced this week he will vote for the massive financial overhaul bill currently pending in Washington. Two other Republicans are on board, senators both from Maine, Susan Collins and Olympia Snow, and that could give Democrats enough votes to pass the landmark reform legislation before the end of the week. But Scott Brown's support came with a price. So joining us now with more on exactly what that price was and what it means for the Massachusetts financial industry is Mark Williams. He's an executive in residence at Boston University and author of Uncontrolled Risk, The Lessons of Lehman Brothers and How Systemic Risk Can Still Bring Down the World Financial System. Mark Williams, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Yes, glad to be here.
So let me ask you, there's two major provisions or changes that have been made to the financial overhaul bill that got Scott Brown to sign on, as he said yesterday, to the bill. The first is the change in the type of investments some large financial institutions can engage in. And then there's also one that has to do with how the bill is paid for. So let's start with that second one. How is this overhaul now going to be funded?
Right. So as of 2 weeks ago, it looked like it would be funded from the risk takers themselves, the very large banks that actually helped create this financial crisis. And since then, Scott Brown has been very effective at making that now coming from TARP money, which specifically to a taxpayer, what that means is that taxpayers now are paying for greater regulation to oversee our banks.
Okay. And also, I understand that part of the money is going to also come from increased dues to the FDIC from banks as well?
That's correct. A smaller portion is going to come directly from an increased fee that is for FDIC-insured banks.
Okay, so I just want to be sure that I get this right, because the whole financial world can be a little complicated, but your main point is that rather than banks themselves paying for the regulation now, taxpayers are going to be doing that.
That's correct, and that should be very clear here. That's the major change here that Scott Brown has been very effective as. And, I look at him now and I say, this is the senator not from Massachusetts, but the senator from State Street.
Okay, well, speaking of State Street, that is the bank that everyone is talking about regarding the second major provision at play here that Scott Brown won, and that is one involving changes to the so-called Volcker Rule. So first, take us back to exactly what the Volcker Rule is.
Sure. Well, Paul Volcker himself was a very prominent federal regulator at the Federal Reserve back in the 70s and early 80s. And what he realized very quickly now that he's an economic advisor for the president is that banks themselves over time have a tendency to get themselves in trouble. So what we need to do is protect banks against themselves. And that's exactly what the Volcker Rule was about. It was to say banks themselves could not get involved in non-core activities, that is, taking their own capital and putting it at risk and trading in risky businesses.
Mm-hmm. And they do that, okay, and explain to me how exactly that happens. So why is it so bad for banks to be using their own capital in these risky investments?
Right, the Volcker Rule actually strips out banks and it says, hey, banks, you should get involved in commercial lending and consumer lending, but you shouldn't be involved in using your own capital to invest in things like hedge funds, which traditionally have been more risky, and also what we call private equity funds.
Is it because that it led banks to take greater risks? Because it wasn't a money from their clients, it was their own money?
Right. What we realize is that banks themselves got into trouble by taking greater risks. And so, in essence, what the Volcker Rule was to do was really to pull banks back and say, hey, get back to the basics. You know, Meghna, three decades ago when we looked at a banker and a bank was boring. So what's happened in the last three decades is banks have become riskier. And Volcker actually is a historian of banks and banking, and he's really saying we need to get back to basics.
Okay. So in the case of State Street, I understand that the bank did actually invest in some of these types of risky assets, the mortgage-backed securities or other types of securities. And when those went bad during the financial crisis, State Street made up for the losses by moving funds out of activities that were actually going well for them, that were healthier. And that actually ended up putting the entire firm at risk.
That's correct. State Street itself is very important. It's in the country, it's the 19th largest bank. But if we look at the assets under management, it's $19 trillion. It's a very large bank. When the financial crisis was at its peak, what we saw with State Street is that if State Street crumbled, then the overall financial system in the United States would also crumble. So we had to protect State Street. State Street took $2 billion worth of TARP money and last year paid it back. It is a bank that we need to have a stable economy. What we learned very quickly was that in a weak economy, or we only can be as strong as our weakest bank. Mm-hmm. And State Street proved to be one of those weak links of the many banks that we had.
Okay. So now the purest reading of the Volcker Rule would say that banks should not be spending any of their own capital in these risky investments or in these investments in general. But now the modification that Senator Brown has won says that they can risk about, I mean, they can use about 3% of their capital. Is that right?
That's correct. And although 3% might sound very low, State Street itself has over $150 billion in assets. It has capital of $15 billion. So 3% still is a large sum of money that they can invest in non-core risky investments.
Mm-hmm. And what effect does this have? It doesn't just apply to State Street. It applies to any large bank above a certain capital size that they can do this 3% now?
Yeah, so the Volcker Rule itself, the pure rule would say no banks get involved in trading at all. 3% rule now is allowing for very large banks now to get involved in these riskier activities.
Okay. So the point here is that the Volcker Rule has been modified a little, and that won Senator Brown's support. But do you think that this is going to, if and when the financial overhaul bill actually gets passed, that the 3% is just kind of the beginning of some wiggle room for banks, that they could actually expand that over time?
Absolutely. I see it as nothing more than just a foot in the door to expand their involvement with increased risky trading involvement activities. What we saw was the Glass-Steagall Act itself. It was repealed in 1999, but the wiggle room started in the 1980s, that banks were allowed to get involved with investment banking activities, and slowly this wiggle room became an official repeal. And now we know that the great credit crisis of 2008 happened in part because of the Glass-Steagall Act and the fact that it was repealed.
Mm-hmm. So do you think this is an overall weakening of the financial reform overhaul, or is Senator Brown actually just doing what a senator does, and that is looking after major institutions and stakeholders from the state that put him into office?
Well, I think on one hand, you could argue that State Street is a large employer in Massachusetts. Globally, it employs over 28,000 employees. So that's a positive, that he's making sure that this is an entity itself that can get involved in other activities. But yet, these other activities could actually weaken the very institution that employs. And we saw when State Street weakened itself by 2008, it laid off many, many employees within Massachusetts. On the other hand, to pay for financial reform, this new bill, he's asking the American people to pay for it through TARP. So, in essence, I don't buy his logic.
You don't buy his logic. Okay. And, you wrote your book called Uncontrolled Risk, and about systemic risk in our financial industries, global financial industries. So one thing which, we spoke several weeks ago with Representative Barney Frank just after he did that marathon 20 hours to get the bill sort of hashed out between the House and Senate versions. Do you think, as it stands, that we have a bill now that will prevent systemic risk or reduce systemic risk in our financial system?
We have a bill that has reform in it. I see it not eliminating financial risk, that is systemic risk. And for your listenership, systemic risk is the risk that one entity can go belly up and it can create a domino effect globally. We have a bill that's being passed. It's not a strong bill. We're asking the Fed, and we're also asking other regulators to oversee systemic risk. What we do know is that the 30 top financial institutions globally, only 4 reside in the United States. So systemic risk, to solve that problem, has global oversight implications. And this bill in the United States only addresses 4 of those 30 big institutions.
Mm-hmm. So does it seem to you that as long as the temptation exists, that so does the risk?
Absolutely. And this is capitalism. Banks are supposed to take risk to get return. But the problem is that we've seen that historically banks have been very good at shooting themselves in the foot. Mm-hmm. And so we have to protect banks against themselves.
We should say that Senator Brown yesterday released a statement on why he has decided to vote for the reform bill now. And he says that it is a better bill than when it was when this whole process started. While it isn't perfect, I expect to support the bill when it comes up for a vote because it includes safeguards to help prevent another financial meltdown. It ensures that consumers are protected and it is paid for without new taxes. That doesn't mean our work is done. Further reforms are still needed to address the government's role in the financial crisis, including significant changes to the way Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac operate. So that is from Senator Scott Brown, his statement on why he is going to vote for the financial reform bill, and that vote may actually come as soon as the end of this week. Mark Williams, author of Uncontrolled Risk and executive in residence at Boston University, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here.
Coming up, lawmakers and the medical industry are taking aim at the state's ban against gifts and meals and vacations and swag to doctors from pharmaceutical reps. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.